This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, joined by Will Birchfield, and we are going to start off this episode with a game, Will.
I
didn't prepare you for this. I'm going to list a jersey number, and you're going to tell me the player that wears it on the current Detroit Lions roster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we are going to start. We're going to start with number 66. And I'll tell you right now, it's not Joe Dahl.
I will go number 66, Niece.
That is incorrect. It is. It is Miles Adams.
I should have known.
Yeah. Can you tell me where Miles Adams came from this week?
Miles Adams came from the practice squad of the Seahawks.
Yes, that is. We'll give you 1 point out of the two possible
where
points.
He had four tackles
in
games, if I'm not mistaken.
That's beyond my knowledge. I know he was
that myself for knowing that.
Yeah. I know he was college teammates with Jack Fox. I know he's a really smart dude. I got a chance to talk to him, but I think all these dudes I'm quizzing you about, by the way, are going to play this week. Do you know who number 47 is?
Number 47 on the current roster.
Do you know any 47s in Lions history?
Obviously, that would be Jamal Adams.
That one was a little bit tricky because he's been here for a couple weeks. That is Ezekiel Turner.
Oh, well done. Well done.
Yeah. I'll just ask you straight up. Do you know Jamal Adams' number?
I don't. No. Can you fill us in?
I think I made a joke this week, and it was directed at you that he unretired Will Harris's number from the rafters.
Yeah. Yeah. The great 25 of Will Harris.
Yeah. I'll hit you with two more.
Please do.
Two more. Do you know who wears number 96 on the current roster?
Broderick Martin.
That is correct.
After trading numbers with Za'Darius Smith, correct?
Yeah, I tried to sneak another one by you.
And, yeah.
I think that one's going to be relevant this week, Will.
Yeah, it does feel like it.
But and last one from me is, I even have to look these up, 78.
78. I'm going to go with Jonah Williams.
Yeah. Did you just straight up power deduction there?
Yeah. 100%.
Who's the last
the
guy
they signed? Have we not mentioned yet?
Yeah. I also skipped Quan Alexander, who's wearing number 10 of, Corey Fuller fame.
Oh, nice.
Tre'Quan Smith fame. Linebacker wearing wide receiver number. Always, always good. Really speaks volumes to where your roster's at health wise.
Yeah.
I mean, these are some training camp numbers right now that these guys are wearing.
Hey, was Don Muehlbach 46?
48, I believe.
48. Okay. Yeah, that was the name I was trying to come up with when you mentioned 47, I think.
I think Craig Reynolds previously wore 46 before he was able to streamline that to a 13. But look, the point here, Will, is this roster is in a way. They've lost so many dudes, and I get like next man up and everybody deals with injuries, but despite my failed efforts to kind of contextualize what's going on, the eye test tells you all you need to know. Like, this team has suffered in an inordinate amount of injuries, signed four defensive players this week. And right now it's kind of tracking that all four might play after being on the roster for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah. The best way to contextualize it in my mind is that the front seven that the Lions have on IR would be a pretty darn good front seven for almost any NFL team right now. If you lined up Aiden Hutchinson across from Marcus Davenport, mm-hmm. moved Levi and Pascal inside. I know they're not on the IR, but guys who won't play on Thursday.
Sure, we can put Pecco in there.
And Pascal on the inside. Had Pecco maybe as a rotational piece. And then at linebacker had Anzalone, Barnes, and Rodriguez. That's a darn good front seven that this team is entirely missing. I bet a lot of NFL defenses and defensive coordinators, if put to a lie detector, would say, yeah, I'll take that front seven over the one we have right now. And not a single one of those guys is playing currently for this defense. And yet they keep finding a way to answer the bell. It did feel like in the second half last week, those injuries began to seriously catch up to them for the first time, especially up front when all of a sudden Pascal goes down and Levi goes down on top of the attrition they've already suffered. But, you know, just another credit to Aaron Glenn for keeping his guys locked in all the way through that game and ultimately getting the zany, wonky, weird stop they finally did.
Yeah, the funny thing to me going through that film, because I expected the same thing. You know, another guy I thought missing from that game, probably going to be back this week, Carlton Davis. I thought that absence was going to show up glaring in the film review. And in reality, like, maybe the two worst players in the second half of that game were the Lions' two best players defensively, and Kirby Joseph and Brian Branch, you know, Aleem McNeil certainly in that mix as well of best players, not worst performers. But yeah. It was a rocky performance from the safeties. I don't know if they were, you know, it's one of those things like, were they trying to do too much because they were overlapping from other guys missing? That is certainly within the realm of possibility. But what was so interesting about that Thanksgiving game was the guys that stepped up. And that's really kind of the story right now of the defense, right? You got Elkwadin Muhammad, who hadn't done much of anything in his limited opportunities thus far here and wasn't even in the league last year, falling out. I mean, just making all kinds of plays off the edge and
covering Keenan Allen.
That one play, I assume you're talking about the one where he had the pass breakup on the final drive.
Yes.
He jammed a dude in, it might have been Keenan Allen. I can't remember. You may know. And he jammed that dude into another dude and then dropped back and broke up the pass. Like he disrupted the entire concept.
Yeah.
On that half of the field. And he certainly disrupted the Bears' offensive tackles through the duration of that game, drew a hold, had seven pressures, had a sack on that final drive. Unbelievable performance when the Lions needed it most. And, you know, they're gonna look to him again, obviously, this week with Pascal and Levi. You know, I would imagine Muhammad gets the start and sees, no pun intended, the Lions' share of the snaps in this one. The other guy that stepped up in that game, and I just don't think we can ignore it is Kendall Vildor. You know, that's a guy that had a real rocky game and got away with it being a much rockier performance against Indianapolis the week before. And I would argue pretty strongly he was their best cornerback on the field against some really, really damn fine wide receivers in Chicago. So you know, that's kind of the story right now in the Lions defense is these unsung, unknown, unexpected heroes, if you will, stepping up and filling the void. And even though they're going to have, as Tim Twentyman pointed out to me in a conversation, they're going to have essentially nine of their starters on the field. The rotation is so depleted. Guys are going to be playing in roles that are bigger roles than they normally do. It's they're going to need a whole lot more of guys stepping up this week.
Yeah, and they're going to need a whole lot more from their mainstays who are still healthy. And yeah. I think this is worth touching on. You know, I feel like I'm repeating myself now every week on this podcast praising Aaron Glenn and using words like a credit to him, a testament to him. So let me make this point in a different way. This is also a tribute to Brad Holmes and the pro scouting department mm-hmm. for assembling a roster in the offseason with players who are ready to step up, and then going and adding players after the attrition who are able to make an impact on this team. But one of the guys he added this offseason who we also don't talk enough about is DJ Reader, who was phenomenal in that
game. What are you talking about? He was a guest on this show.
He was a guest, but I feel like up front, you know, Ali McNeil, given his rise into stardom, gets a ton of attention. Obviously, Hutchinson, when he's healthy, gets tons of attention. Za'Darius Smith has drawn some more eyebrows, some more eyeballs since arriving. But DJ Reader was a wrecking ball in exactly the way the Lions envisioned he would be playing next to McNeil when he got here this summer. He was a force, and he and McNeil together are a big reason why the defensive line has still been able to mount just enough pressure without so many of its best edge rushers. But then also the addition of Za'Darius Smith, like that is exactly why they brought him here when they did. They were missing the best edge rushers and Davenport and Hutchinson, and throw Derek Barnes in there. And obviously he can move to the inside, but when they needed rushes from the outside on Thursday, there was Za'Darius Smith at pretty critical junctures of that game. Felt like his coming out party in Detroit, like his arrival on the scene as a key member of this defense. And when he was asked afterward about the next opponent on the schedule, I mentioned this in my story that I wrote and on Twitter, he broke into a grin like the Grinch. He just goes, "Oh, this is a team that I'm familiar with." Yeah, he is fired up to play the Packers on Thursday. But back to the larger point, they bring in also a guy like Al-Qaeddine Muhammad, who had a history with Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell in New Orleans. They felt like that would help him step in right away, make an impact. And he has when given his chances. So, yes, let's certainly praise Aaron Glenn for putting these guys in spots to succeed, but also Brad Holmes and the scouting department for bringing these guys in and knowing that, or at least expecting that they would make an impact. And that's why you got to feel pretty good about the prospects of guys like Jamal Adams, Quan Alexander, Jonah Williams, and go right down the line.
Yeah, I have a lot of points. I'm going to condense them as best as possible. I may have mentioned this before. I do a roadmap to the offseason every year and just kind of highlight everything that the Lions kind of have check mark from the point of the season ending to, you know, training camp. And within that, you know, I kind of highlight some examples. And within free agency, the guy I said that I think would be most game changing if they could afford him was DJ Reader. You know, I kind of saw that fit right away. I saw how it could unlock Hutchinson, unlock McNeil. Obviously the health was a question mark at that point, but Reader is exactly the guy that I thought he was. I know this is a career high in sacks for him, but he's got 16 pressures. He's had more than 30 three of the last 4 years when he's been healthy. He's a better pass rusher than people give him credit for. I asked him in the locker room, I said, "Hey, it's the second time you've had two sacks. You remember the last time, how long ago it was?" And he goes, "I don't know when it was, but I got Tom Brady twice." I was like, so he knew exactly the game there.
Is that Tampa Tom Brady or New England Tom Brady?
That was New England Tom Brady. It was 2018, so it was a 6-year gap between two sack games for Mr. Reader. In terms of Smith, one thing I got to say is I love the inside rushes, and it's very Mike Zimmer-esque. It's probably something he picked up in Minnesota that Aaron Glenn saw in his little quick film study of him, talking to him what he liked, the walking around, the standing up. It is giving guards nightmares. I mean, he is a menace rushing from the inside, and he's using spin moves and rips, and he's just got a full tool set to utilize on the inside, and it's really, really been a valuable resource besides McNeil on those third and long, second and long plays. That's just giving them another dimension of the rush. I think I said this right away, like that was the biggest upgrade immediately, was what he offered the interior rush on those clear passing situations. And then to your point about the pro personnel department, it's a really, really good one. I know people love to credit Brad Holmes because that's the easiest thing to do. And where Brad Holmes is really good in his job, where all good leaders are at their jobs, is delegation. Mm-hmm. You identify people below you in the structure of power that are, you know, what they're, the Lions use the term superpower, right?
Yeah.
And so within that, you know, you've had guys that negotiate contracts and handle the heavy lifting there. And in the pro personnel department, a guy that, you know, I'm going to throw his name out there because he just, nobody talks about him. He's been here, I don't even know how long, 20 years, Rob Lohman. You know, he is their, I think it's director. They're all different in different ways. A director of pro personnel, something like that. Brad Holmes has empowered a guy like Rob Lowman, and he's empowered guys in the college scouting departments. He's empowered guys in the contract negotiation fields. It's what makes Brad Holmes great and why Brad Holmes deserves credit. But I want to take this the second here to give Lowman some love. And this goes back to training camp, right? Like, that guy runs a staff that is fully in charge of knowing all 32 teams, 90 man rosters, to understand the guys that, so when they have kicker issues, for example, in camp, Badgley goes down, Lowman has a database of like six kickers to call in for a tryout right away. Like, there's no hesitation. He could be on the phone immediately calling these guys. And it's, you see it more in camp, but right now, I mean, his database and the connections to Lions coaching staff members in the past and present, is helping them fill these spots with guys that are contributing right away. The Muhammads, the David Longs, the Zeke Turners that have contributed right away. And then now guys that they're going to ask to contribute right away that we haven't seen yet. You know, Lowman is doing a great job in conjunction with the rest of the front office, but I just want to make sure to get that name out there because it's just one people don't hear very often.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure he had a hand in bringing Jamal Adams in here. And obviously he's created a whole bunch of buzz this week. And as we begin to try and envision how they'll use Jamal Adams, you know, I think a lot of people have reflexively gone to Ifeatu Melifonwu, just given the way that he blitzed so well as a safety towards the end of last season. I think you and I agree that we almost see a little bit more of a Derek Barnes role in the way that they might utilize Jamal Adams than Melifonwu. Maybe some hybrid of the two, but look, it's always risky to read too much into what a sleep deprived or over caffeinated Dan Campbell might say, but he has mentioned jokingly that they could use Jamal Adams as a DN, but I think less jokingly hinted at the possibility of using him as an OLB outside linebacker, especially in pass rushing downs when he could also drop into coverage if necessary against a tight end or a running back out of the backfield. And I know that the sacks have dried up in a big way for Adams over the past four seasons, mostly injury related, but he was the most prolific safety in terms of attacking the quarterback over his first four seasons. And that's an obvious need for this team. And there's an obvious hole to fill at that Sam linebacker spot that now that Barnes and Rodriguez are down. And it just seems to me likely that they'll find a way to utilize Jamal Adams, who has some of the same physical qualities as Derek Barnes in that sort of role.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up what weight they're listing Jamal Adams at. I know he's had a playing weight listed at 213. That's what the Lions list him at.
He's a house.
Adams is listed at 213. Brian Branch is listed at 203. That is a lie.
Yeah, that is a bold-faced lie.
They he's don't look like,
heavier than Brian Branch.
How many?
I would say at least 20 pounds heavier. What would you put it at?
Yeah, 20 to 25, I think. Yeah, and Adams walked by me in the locker room the first day he was here. He was heading to orientation. He didn't talk till the next day, but like he doesn't look like a safety.
No.
So to see him working with the linebackers during individual drills, like it looks natural. He's the size of a Zeke Turner, who's 225, you know, maybe even the size of a David Long. And that's, I know he's listed at safety, but if you look at his history, he hasn't played a lot of free safety. He's never played a ton deep. It's just never been his forte. He makes his living in the box, whether that's, well, I guess it's not in the box if you're split out in the slot covering the tight end, but does that very well. But he's always been this really dynamic pass rusher. And a lot of that comes off the edge. 2020, 34 pressures. 2019, 25 pressures. 2018, 22 pressures. He rushed the quarterback the most of those three seasons, 106. So 34 pressures on 106 pass rushes.
Yeah.
He's basically affecting the quarterback 30% of the time over a three-year stretch. He has 20-plus career sacks. He had 16 over two seasons. Really, really dynamic, obviously cultivated by playing capture the flag, as he told us in elementary school.
Yeah.
He's not going to play 90% of the snaps like Derek Barnes. He might be out there for 10, you know, and so where he's not like Melifon was, he's not going to play those deep reps, but will he cover a tight end? Will he blitz? Can he be effective? That's what we don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. Adams, of the guys they signed, Jamal, not Miles, is certainly the most, has my interest the most. I want to see it. I mean, that's an all pro. I want to see what he's got left in the tank. You know, can he have, not necessarily just a Darius Smith impact, can he have a Bruce Irvin level impact for this team down the stretch when they desperately need just a little juice from a lot of different areas right now?
Yeah, you know how I know that he's the most intriguing addition of the four? Said he was the only one who had probably 20 to 25 reporters loitering outside the locker room yesterday, waiting to interview him in his scrum in the hallway. He does.
And he's on the practice squad.
He does command attention. And it was jarring, honestly, to sit there and listen to him speak about the Detroit Lions as a first-class organization and to categorize it as a dream come true to come here and to say this was a team that he was essentially hoping to wind up with when he requested his release from the Titans back in October. You know, I think I put the quote out there on Twitter, and everyone was just like, what timeline is this? How did we get here? But this sentiment is real, and it's spreading now across the NFL. And I would say that it has been for the better part of 2 years now that the Detroit Lions, led by Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, are a desirable team to come play for. And obviously, winning is the biggest piece of that. But it feels like more and more word has spread among players in the NFL that this is an organization that, because it has so many important figures who played in the NFL, treats its players the right way. And Dan Campbell has never coached Jamal Adams, doesn't really have any history with him. And after one practice, Jamal Adams was talking about Dan Campbell as a coach who he wants to run through a wall for. And that didn't seem like lip service. That felt like a sincere comment from Jamal Adams. And it's just another example of the way that Dan Campbell and others have changed significantly the perception of this team from the outside looking in. As Jamal Adams said, they've been kicking everybody's ass, and they've been doing it with flair and with togetherness. And I think that word is getting around the NFL. I would not be surprised, and I meant to follow up with Jamal today, maybe I will at some point next week, if he talked to Quandre Diggs about his time here. Obviously, Quandre never played for Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, but still speaks highly of his experience playing in front of these fans and in the city. I would imagine that Quandre vouched for Detroit as a good place to play to Jamal Adams. And now you've got other players who can vouch for Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes and really everyone in this locker room.
Yeah. Dan actually did wait on Jamal Adams at Applebee's once. That was the connection. We could do an entire podcast about the culture of this organization. We really could. The reasons guys want to play here. It's the former players on the staff. It's their playing style. It's the lack of churn on the roster, which I think is really underrated, that you know that your job, you're not walking on eggshells for your job every waking minute, that you know if you give maximum effort to this organization, they'll give you a little bit of leeway to figure it out. You know, all those things resonate with guys when they're making decisions. And we saw Za'Darius Smith kind of push his way here. And we saw, I talked to Zeke Turner for a feature I posted this morning, and he called the organization second to none. Guess what? That dude's played on 5 teams this calendar year. So he's got a little insight, including Seattle and Houston, San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, those are good organizations as well. And, you know, of course, you're going to speak highly of your current employer, but we've seen the other side of the coin with how players are treated here, how much they want to be here. Opportunity and money always lead the way for players, but the tiebreakers with this current regime all fall in their favor.
Yeah, no doubt. And it wouldn't be shocking if Quan Alexander takes a field on Thursday and ends up with a tackle for loss and half a sack and two passes defended, because that's just kind of how the Lions have utilized the players they've brought in this season. It feels like everyone is here to fill a purpose, not just a roster spot. I think sometimes NFL teams do the latter. Like, we have a spot on the roster, we got to fill it. Let's go bring someone in who might give us what we're looking for. They seem to be a little bit more specific in the players that they acquire, and that's part of the reason that when they get here, they can make an impact.
And on top of that, if they find something new that they didn't know about the player on the practice field, which they do because of the way they practice,
yeah,
then they get a new role. And going back to Turner, special team specialist entire career, he plays 22 snaps, has a sack on the closing drive against the Bears, splits a sack with Za'Darius Smith, and just speaks volumes that they're willing to give guys chance strictly based on merit.
Because right, they practice hard. Sorry, I'll round that point off. Like, they're one of the only teams, as far as I know, that does consistent padded one-on-one best versus best reps in the NFL. This is the exact way that Melifonwu found himself blitzing so often as a safety at the end of last season. He was coming off of an injury in midseason, and when he returned to practice, they started unleashing him in these one-on-one blitzing drills, safeties, DBs versus tight ends. And Melifonwu was just winning rep after rep after rep. And AG was like, all right, we have to use this in a game. They do treat practice as a true replica of Sunday or Thursday night. And when players thrive in those spots, they find ways to utilize those skills on the field. So I think practice is kind of hand waved away by a lot of outsiders and maybe by a lot of players on other teams, but it matters here. And it's a big piece of how they build the game plan on a week in, week out basis.
All right, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back with a locker room interview. We're supposed to get Aleem McNeil this week. He had a little treatment he had to take care of. So Aleem is his debut on the pod is delayed. He's delayed, but we looked around and we found another guy who stepped in and filled the void. So you'll hear Will and I's interview with tight end Brock Wright after the break. All right, we're back from the break. Here is Will and my interview with Detroit Lions tight end Brock Wright.
All right, this week joining us on the podcast with Will is tight end Brock Wright. Brock, how we doing?
Great, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So you got the payday this year. Is that enough to get the invite to tight end you?
Yeah, I think so. I got the invite last year and had a great time.
Right. Who was the most reckless attendee at tight end you?
Oh,
whatever that word might mean to you.
Sam Laporta, you got to watch out for him. He's a menace. You got to keep a close eye on him. You never know what he's going to do.
I have a hard time believing that. I feel like Iowa guys, like, they're in bed at 9 after they've eaten their couple corn cobs and just Kittle. Call it a day, right. Except for George Kittle. What did you gain from that experience? I mean, what was the best part for you?
I just meeting the other guys. It's always fun to meet people that you see on Sundays, and I think that's what I take most out of the experience, is every week we'll go into a game, and then you get to see guys who you may not have known before. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool. Just getting to know people all throughout the league, and then kind of hearing their stories, where they come from, and just picking up little tidbits from them.
How about getting to know Sam over the past few seasons? Obviously, you guys are pretty tight in that tight ends room, but what have you learned about Sam that you've grown to like the most? And can you tell us something about him that we might not know on the outside?
He's pretty easy to read. He's just like the most fun-loving, like goofy dude. Yeah. Off the field stuff, just like great heart, just the best person. But then on the field, he's just an incredibly hard worker, physical, wants to do his job, whatever he's asked to do. He just grinds every day. So it's been great having him in the room, and having him as a teammate's awesome, and friend even better.
I think we compared him pretty early on to a golden retriever. Like, if he was a dog, that would be the dog describes him. Do you feel like that's pretty accurate?
Yeah, for sure. Carly and I talk about that all the time. That's how he is. He's just like always like a happy-go-lucky guy, you know?
Who's the guy outside the tight end room that you're closest with on this roster?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Who invades that corner of the room?
In the offseason, Michael Badgley is my golf partner. So I'm always hanging out with the specialists. Those are the guys we hang out with on the out on the golf course, when OTAs are in season. So Yeah, I'd say Badge.
They
Badge
say
or Tom Kennedy's been my guy for 4 years now. Yeah.
That's the way you get better is you play with people better. And the specialists are always the best at golf. I mean, Badgley's probably got a 3 handicap.
Yeah, he was down to a 5 or 6 last offseason. So they have a little bit more time on their hands. Yeah. I hope they're beating us.
Where are you sitting at? Yeah.
Right, I mean, my lowest ever was a 9.1. So this I'm pretty good. Not good, but respectable. Yeah. So.
What's the best club in your bag? What's your best shot?
I feel like 7 iron's always good. I use a 3 hybrid that I'm pretty solid with. That's my favorite club.
Big dog.
That's my punch out of the woods club. Yeah. Little chip that goes 180 while rolling.
Right.
So I heard your parents, after you moved out, they replaced you with a bunch of exotic animals. Can you explain this a little bit? What's going on down in Texas with your parents?
Yeah, so I guess 2019 it was. My dad purchased what's now Big Dog Ranch. And it's High Fence Ranch they have out there in Iola, Texas, close to College Station, mm-hmm. where A&M is. Yeah. And, there's probably 9-10 different species out there of different kinds of exotics than domestics, white-tailed deer and stuff like that. So they actually just did Thanksgiving out there the other day, my family. So it's just a great place to kind of go out, relax, and get away from, regular life.
Do you know if there's anything on the checklist? Is there something they're trying to acquire here? Or is the next season of Tiger King going to be about your family?
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, we're joking recently about my dad being the zebra king because there's a few zebra out there. But
you could cast Carly as Carol Baskin.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. I don't know if she'd like that. That'd be great. We went down there in the off season and she got to see it and loved it. We were down for my brother's wedding and it's easy to fall in love with a place like that, beautiful animals and stuff. But in terms of acquiring new animals, I don't know. There's a few Nilgai out there right now. That population's growing. I think that's one of the coolest animals ever. They taste really good, too. So hopefully the population grows really healthy for that reason.
And then Brock and then shrink it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Do you feel any kind of kinship or connection to Dan Campbell, given your mutual roots and your mutual kind of Texas upbringings and backgrounds?
Yeah, for sure. You feel that. I've talked to him about Texas before and, missing Texas sometimes. And, there's a little bit of that proud Texan and everyone who's from there. It's just something about the state and the friendly nature and the culture of the people. And then, sometimes he'll play some clips for us in the team meetings. It'll be a clip from Tombstone or something like that that I grew up watching because of my dad and my upbringing. So I definitely feel the kinship there. Yeah. And also him wearing 89 for the Lions, pretty cool deal too.
So I gotta ask, because that was a funny thing. After you signed back and they had the draft and all of them were wearing 89, there was this thing on Twitter. Everybody thought they were taunting the 49ers. I'm just, obviously we know what was going on, but did you get a good kick out of that they thought the Lions were clowning the 49ers during the draft?
I just thought it was funny that people thought that was the reason, because obviously we know my parents joke all the time about traveling to the games and they're like, hey, there's 89 jerseys everywhere. Not a single one of them says right on it, though. So every time they find someone that has right on it, they want to go up and talk to them like, hey, why did you buy that?
They're like, we thought it was Dan Campbell.
They're big fans of the Jets catch for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Probably.
Do you was the degree at Notre Dame worth it, given how little they used you as a receiver? I mean, they've probably held your value down a little bit as a pass catcher in the NFL.
I don't regret anything there. I've met some of the most amazing people at Notre Dame. I'm best friends for life.
I feel like you're taking this question more seriously than I intended. Just so we're clear, I was not really hammering Notre Dame.
You caught me off guard too. I was like, damn, that's deep.
I went hard at Notre Dame, but it was a joke. I promise.
On that note, though, when did you feel like you arrived in the NFL? I mean, obviously, your first couple of years, you were trying to find your footing, and then you found a role here, and it seems like your pass catching opportunities have grown more and more in the years since. When did you feel like you were kind of a staple in this league?
I felt a little bit of it my rookie year towards the end of the season, getting a lot of playing time. Obviously, mm-hmm. we had some injuries, and so the more experience I got, the more comfortable I was on the field. Getting the chance to start in a lot of games and just get that experience was huge. And then rolling into the second season, building off of that. Mm-hmm. So I'd say sometime in my second year, kind of starting to feel in like, hey, I can make a name for myself or a place for myself, at least in this league, and stick around a little while.
Were you expecting the offer from San Fran? Did that catch you off guard at all? And what was it like to all of a sudden be a guy who was like highly sought after by this team's nearest NFC rival?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't really know what to expect in that situation, just because it seemed like it was kind of a unique situation we were in with the restricted free agency. Knew there was a shot, and kind of just went off of what, you know, my agents were, you know, kind of saying like, hey, here's how we should roll.
So it must have been like, hell yeah, like I'm getting paid one way or another. Either it's going to be in San Fran or it's going to be here, but this is a statement that I'm a valued player and soon to be a lucrative player in the NFL, right?
Definitely nice to have that opportunity.
That's where you always aim to get to in the NFL, is like that second contract, right? Like an undrafted rookie deal isn't, I mean, it's not peanuts, but it's not a lot to sustain you for life, right? What's the one thing you treated yourself to, you know, after, you know, getting a little bit more stability in this league, Brock?
I did buy a house back in Houston.
Nice. Any zebras there?
No zebras there, but it's on the golf course. Where I'm a member at back home, where my family grew up going, hanging out at. So that's pretty cool.
That is awesome.
If you weren't a pro football player, we'd love to ask guys this question: what do you think you'd be doing right now? Everyone says like I'd be playing in the NBA. Obviously, Terrion Arnold says he'd be either a rapper or a basketball player. I'm guessing neither one applies to you.
Yeah.
What would Brock Wright be doing if he wasn't in the NFL?
I'd probably be trading oil or something like that. Nice.
That's the most Texas job I've ever heard.
I know. Like, I don't know. What's the...
Like a modern day There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. Daniel Plainview. I was watching that a couple weeks ago, actually.
Great film.
Yeah. Something along those lines. Yeah. Maybe something in finance or real estate, but... Be trying to
Renaissance man. You got options.
This is a good segue for me to just talk about again. There Will Be Blood's one of my favorites. Sounds like you really enjoyed it as well. You're into screenplay, and I think that's something that you have an ambition to do someday. Mm-hmm. Where are you at percent wise in that? Like, do you have ideas formed in your head? Do you have something cooking? You know, what's the long term ambition there, Brock?
Yeah, well, I think of ideas all the time. My notes app is just filled with, if you type in like script idea, I'll probably have, you know, like 15 different tabs that'll show up. I just love film and reading and watching movies, and so I get all these ideas of storytelling and whatnot. And I mean, I've never been a writer, so I don't know how well I can actually put pen to paper with that stuff. But it'd be cool to work in the industry, you know, in some capacity, whether it's producing or getting out some short stories or whatever.
You more is it a theme that you like? Are you drama, comedy, a little bit of everything?
Everything. Yeah. I have an idea for a Western, an idea for more of like a sci-fi, some more. Yeah, you know, like real life type stories. So, I'm into everything.
If you were ever going to write a football movie and you had to cast a football coach, like, could there be any more iconic traditional football coach than Dan Campbell? It seems like he's straight out of central casting.
It's incredible. Yeah. It really is. If you could build the, you know, that's your head coach. That's what you got.
Yeah.
We could do another Air Bud starring Sam LaPorta.
Perfect. You got the retriever.
Air Bud 5, Air Bud 6.
Yeah. Man.
I had one for you that just slipped my mind, so I'm going to stall here until it comes back to me. Just when you reflect on your career through 3 years here, what are you proudest about?
I'd probably just my improvement from year to year, season to season, just coming in as a very green, as an undrafted free agent. I had Ben Johnson as my tight end coach my rookie year, and I learned more football in one training camp from him than I did my entire life playing football, you know. So just having guys like him and the coaches I've had here to just be able to improve. I think I'm definitely proud of that, kind of like we talked about earlier, carving a role for myself in the league. So
this is a long way from Texas, Brock. I mean, in every way, culturally and everything. And so what have you, you know, grown to love or appreciate about being in Michigan and in Detroit?
Yeah, I know it is. There are they're kind of opposites in a lot of ways. If you look at the seasons, it's like complete opposites. Summertime, you don't want to be in Houston because of how miserably hot it is. Summertime here, it's like I'd rather not be anywhere else in the world than Michigan in the summertime. So a lot of cultural differences, but then, you know, people are all the same too. Very friendly here. They've been nothing but gracious to me since I've been in Michigan. Love the people here, you know. Obviously, my girlfriend Carly is from here and her family. And so just kind of getting to experience like a home away from home and you know, having a new home here now is pretty special. So,
were you a hockey fan at all growing up? Were you a Stars fan? I'm sure you're a Wings fan now, but like, how much more have you grown to love hockey since moving here?
A lot. I mean, we didn't really grow up with hockey. We had the Arrows, the Houston Arrows. For a little bit of time, and then, I mean, by the time I was probably in, I don't know how old, but they were disbanded, so we didn't have hockey growing up. And then at Notre Dame, I was close with some of the hockey guys there, and so kind of started learning about it a bit, but I never had a team until I got to Detroit. So adopted the Red Wings, and now of course big fan because of hockey. So
who's your favorite wing on this year's team right now?
Probably
putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, you are putting me on the spot.
You can always say the captain.
I gotta go with Cop, Andrew Cop.
Oh, that's a good answer. Yeah, he can get after it, I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those hockey guys.
He's a big football fan too.
Yeah.
I feel like we gave Sam. Let's close out with another tiny room. Tell something we don't know about Shane.
Oh, something you don't know about Shane.
He was the opposite of you. He had like 78 touchdowns in college.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. You probably know about all of his records at Mankato. Shane is a really good dad. He's got two sons, Brooks and Decker, and his wife Gabby is awesome. So I would just say he's like off the field, the ultimate family man. So love getting to spend time with him and his kids. And you know, before we knew anyone here, really, our first couple of years, it's like all holidays and everything were spent with the Zylstras. So, nice. So that's like another family away from family for me.
Last one for me, after a big win, playoff win, division win, whatever it might be, is there a drink of choice that, like, when you get home, you want to pull out of the fridge and indulge yourself for a minute?
You're
a guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge drinker, but I enjoy a glass of red wine or a Guinness. I'm a stout guy. So, like after a round of golf, Guinness.
Yeah, that's a very tight end drink, a Guinness. Like it's got some body to it.
Irish.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, Brock. That was awesome. Yeah, Brock. Thanks for giving us some time.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, that was Brock Wright, and before I drop that question, that there was zebras at the Wright Ranch in Texas.
No, I had no idea. I was thrilled to discover that about Brock Wright. He's been a great addition to this team. Always a willing guy in the locker room, and certainly someone from Texas like Dan Campbell, who has really wrapped his arms around Detroit.
Yeah, the things we're unlocking in these interviews, from NBA All-Star games to screenwriting to DJ Raider's son's abs. I mean, we're learning all kinds of weird factoids, but I don't know. I'm enjoying these interviews, and hopefully we'll get a Liam here next week and bring you a fresh round.
Yeah, and he can give us some demos of his upcoming rap album with Therion Arnold, another discovery on the Detroit Football Network podcast.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get a genuine opinion on Therion Arnold's rap skills, not from Therion Arnold, because as according to Therion, he's the best rapper alive. So, all right, we're going to take another quick break here. We're going to come back and quickly dissect the upcoming matchup. Man, a critical one with Green Bay Packers on Thursday night. All right, we're back. I'm Justin Rogers, Will Birchfield, Detroit Football Network podcast. Feels like we've said this a few times this year, but it's tough to not call this the biggest game of the season for the Detroit Lions, Will.
Yeah, it feels like we've had four or five of these games already, which is almost improbable in a year where they're rolling. They've won 10 in a row. They're 11-1. You would feel like at this point you could almost put it on cruise control. But this division is historically good, and this conference with the Eagles' emergence feels deeper all of a sudden. And yeah, this is a huge one, especially with the injuries the Lions are facing down the stretch. They don't really have much margin for error. And that one seed is critical to any team, but especially this team, which has maybe the starkest home field advantage in the NFL. And this is the next hurdle in finishing first in the NFC North and in the NFC. And this is going to be a highly motivated Packers team, given the way the last game against the Lions went. You know, they felt like in some ways they played this team tough, even if the scoreboard didn't indicate it. And I think this is going to be a much different game than the one we saw in Lambeau on a sloppy field on a rain soaked day. You know, I think even Ben Johnson mentioned this week, you know, we expect their defensive line to come off the ball even faster on this turf. You know, that you could argue that the sodden field slowed down their push in Green Bay, but this is a defense that hangs its hat on being attacking in the front four, and the offensive line is going to be in for another big test on Thursday night.
Where's that defensive coordinator from?
Boston College, who just might be playing Michigan in a bowl game. I want to toss that out there, which should be huge for BC. That's a win, whether or not they win or lose the game. Just playing Michigan in a bowl game is a victory.
I wish I could offer up more, but I don't care about Michigan or Michigan State. It's not my jam, unfortunately. That early season game against the Packers was a weird one. Just because of the weather, and it was a really big feather in the Lions' cap. I mean, just because they showed that, you know, it's the indoor team with the outdoor mentality, whatever coach used to talk about. That sounds like a Caldwellism. You know, they exhibited that, and they beat a team that you know is built for that, and did so rather handily. I mean, it was 24-3 before of the Lions took their foot off the gas, and it's weird to even say that because they never do, but I have to imagine the goal was to get out of there as quickly as possible given those conditions. I don't think we really got a true look at this revamped Packers defense because of those conditions, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You know, this defensive front is more about attacking one gap penetration. They traded Za'Darius Smith's former teammate Preston Smith because he didn't fit, requested out, and they've you know, got some more athleticism on the edges. Obviously, Rashawn Gary's still there, the leader, along with Kenny Clark on the inside, and you know, I think we can go back to Thanksgiving last year, Will, where the Packers came here and the Lions were in control of the division. You kind of expected them to cruise and end their Thanksgiving losing streak last year. And that Packers defensive line bullied them. I mean, just kind of embarrassed them in that game. And, you know,
I think they had 27 pressures on Goff that day.
It wasn't good. Yeah. I mean, it really wasn't. And so, you know, that is the fear you have going into this game. And on top of that, you know, you got Dan Skipper out there and he's playing his ass off, but he's not Taylor Decker. You know, probably Decker doesn't play in this one.
Yeah.
That seems to be where this is heading right now. So offensively, that's your challenge. Defensively, Packers have cleaned up a lot of some of their problems early in the season. You know, Jordan Love had interceptions in his first 8 appearances this year, 11 total in those 8 games. The Lions countered with 10 straight games with at least one interception. Well, those trends are reversed right now. The sample size is small. I get it. It's 2 games in a row without interception for the Lions. It's 2 games in a row without interception for Jordan Love. And so that is one starting point in this matchup. You know, finding a way to generate that turnover, to, you know, capitalize on your strength of your safeties, because that's where those mostly are coming from. 2, the Lions had this pretty big lull midseason defending the run. Mm-hmm. And part of that was the Green Bay game. You know, their 3 backs averaged 6 yards a carry in that game. Jacobs didn't run a lot, kind of got taken out by the score in that second half, but he had, 13 carries, 95 yards, 15 carries, 95 yards?
He ripped off some big ones early.
37-yard, bigger in that game. So Lions are in good shape right now at the run defense. 4 in a row, they've held opponents under 100, 3.6 yards per carry during that stretch. They need that trend to continue because, as Aaron Glenn told us this week, everything funnels through Josh Jacobs. It's why Jordan Love is playing so well. It's because Josh Jacobs is removing the pressure off of the quarterback position to force things.
Yeah, and so the Lions defense and their linebackers need to funnel through their defensive tackles and their defensive ends. Obviously, that's when this run defense is at its best, when Jack Campbell can come downhill because guys like Reeder and McNeil and others are handling their blocks. I just went back and looked. Jared Goff last year against the Packers on that Thanksgiving game, 26 pressures against, which was by far and still is by far the most of his Lions tenure.
Thanks.
The only time this season they were even remotely close to allowing that many pressures was against Tampa, 19. And that was a day that he threw the ball 55 times. So those numbers will be skewed by that. But yeah, the Packers defensive line pretty much bullied them in that game. And the Lions responded in the right way. And I think they will again Thursday. You know, I think you and I have mentioned this before on this podcast. Like, there were two teams last year whose anger and aggressiveness on the defensive line kind of caught the Lions off guard. And it was the Packers in that Thanksgiving game. And it was the Bears really in both games. And I think the way the Lions have responded so far against those teams bodes well for Thursday. I think the point about the safeties is a salient one entering this week. The lack of takeaways has been maybe the biggest difference in the defense over the past couple of weeks. And on a defense that obviously is just littered with personnel losses, takeaways will be the difference in whether or not they can hold up down the stretch. You can cover up a lot of flaws by taking the ball away once or twice a game at critical times. And, you know, takeaways, especially interceptions, are never the product of one player. So many other players have to do their job for a ball to wind up in the hands of, say, Kirby Joseph. Like, if you look at last week's game, there was one play where Terrion Arnold had such great coverage on DJ Moore, and it almost wound up in Terrion's first NFL interception. And part of it was because he knew you know the play I'm talking about. But yep. Part of it was he knew that he had Kirby's help deep. And so he was able to play really tight on DJ Moore's comeback route, knowing that if it turned into a double move, he had Kirby right there and he could take that risk. And he was draped over DJ Moore the entire way. Nearly,
it looked like the pass was to Arnold.
Was to Arnold, yeah. And if you go look at after he breaks it up, the first one on the scene, you know, whacking him on the head, congratulations, was Kirby for just the discipline and the trust, the mutual trust in the way he covered that route. Now, later in the game, on the flip side of things, there was a completion, I think, on third down in the red zone on an out route to Odunze, where yep. Arnold also had Kirby's help on the inside. He was playing him like outside leverage, and he bit on a double move to the inside, even though he had Kirby sitting there ready to break on the ball if Caleb threw it. That allowed Odunze to get open to the outside for a pretty easy pitch and catch first down. But my point is that if Arnold just trusts where Kirby is, like, Kirby's ready to go jump that ball and maybe even pick that ball. And so these takeaways that were coming in bunches early are the result of players working in tandem. And you know, the more you can count on that, the more those takeaways should return. But Jordan Love has done a really good job recently of just not taking risks. And given the fact that he already threw a pick six to Joseph this season, and given the fact that Joseph and Branch have put so much ball hawking on tape, you just wonder how many risks Love and the Packers will take on Thursday. But if and when they do, it feels critical to me that the Lions come up with one, maybe two takeaways to win this game, just given all of their other personnel complications on defense.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging, or should be encouraging, with how many were in their hands. Campbell said three. I could make an argument for five where they were in play to make an interception. Kirby had two, one where he reacted low and was a step late. There was another one on that early wheel route where he beat the ball to the spot and just violently collided with Moore.
Yeah.
There was one that sailed over Branch's head that I just don't think he was expecting. There was, you know, the Arnold one, which was a tough play. You know, Moore did a really great job of actually reaching over the top and batting that one down. And maybe the best one was Dorsey. I mean, Dorsey played that fake screen into the back shoulder fade perfectly, and again ran the route for the receiver and just couldn't get his body all the way around to make the catch. But hit him in the chest. You have to believe that if those opportunities keep coming in those numbers, like these Lions are very good at capitalizing on their opponent's mistakes, and they didn't in that one, and it bit them a little bit, and the fact that the Bears were able to come back, but you just need to take one away, and it really can flip the script of the game. You mentioned the 27 pressures, right? In what takes the pressure off a quarterback? It's a run game. And so as much as we're talking about Josh Jacobs, the Packers are talking about, stopping David Montgomery and Jameer Gibbs, because that is going to make life easier for Jared Goff. But the one thing, Phil, that I think is going to stand out this week, Will, is the physicality.
Yep.
Everybody's talking about the Packers' physicality. Everybody knows the Lions are one of the most physical teams. For a team that is banged up, it's probably not the thing that everybody wants to hear. I think this is just going to be utter smash mouth, hard nose football. It should be a real treat for America to get to watch this game on a Thursday night.
Yeah, I agree. Both of these backfields have turned their offensive lines into these physical forces. Like the offensive linemen here take great pleasure and even honor in blocking for Montgomery in particular, because of the way he can turn a 3-yard run into a 6 or 7-yard run, and the way that he always falls forwards and always makes the defense feel it anytime they tackle him. Josh Jacobs is running the exact same way in Green Bay. And then Dan Campbell mentioned it this week that presence and that attitude has permeated the offensive line. This is a unit now that is playing a little bit like the Lions in the way that they want to punch you in the face, because they feel like they have a running back who's doing the same thing. And I was just looking at these numbers. Josh Jacobs is tied for third in the NFL with none other than Derrick Henry in missed tackles forced this season with 54. And he is tied for third behind only Henry and Saquon Barkley, two MVP candidates, by the way, in yards after contact. This dude does not go down easy, and it's why his offensive line blocks so violently for him, just like the Lions do for David Montgomery. And I think there is a clear reckoning in the NFC North that the Lions play the most violent and downhill and in your face brand of football, and an urge on the part of LaFleur and the Packers and O'Connell and the Vikings to show that they can play that game too, and they can push some of that game back in the Lions' own face. Now, it hasn't happened yet this year, although you could argue that Aaron Jones also rushed pretty well against them back in that Minnesota game. But I think this is another chance for the Packers to prove that they can measure up in a fist fight with the Lions. And I wouldn't be surprised, as you said, to see something like that unfold on Thursday night.
It's amazing just looking at the measurements for Jacobs and Montgomery coming out of college. 5'10", 220 for Jacobs, 5'10", 222 for Montgomery, 4'6", 4'6", 3". 40s, like they were, slower than average. Montgomery is the skill set that set him apart, that's helped him, do so well in the league is his, lateral agility. And Jacobs didn't measure in that, but you highlighted the, not just a drill, but a reality of it. He's making guys miss. And so, they really are similar. I know Montgomery at this point in his career is bulked up closer to 230 or maybe even a little over that.
330.
That was Sewell. That was at 330 running back.
Yeah.
But I mean, you really are witnessing a black and blue division. And the nice thing about this Thursday matchup is it's not a short week Thursday matchup. It's been a short month, it felt like, for the Lions and the Packers, probably with 4 games in 18 days, but they did get a full week to kind of prepare for this one. And so you should get closer to their best shots of who they are. And we're going to be watching closely to see, even though they've done it so many times, I don't know why we continue to doubt them, how this defense holds up. More new pieces. Will Glenn be able to pull another rabbit out of his hat? The line, Will, is 3.5. And then I don't even think we need to fool around with how many do you need to give the Packers? I mean, it is the right line. And I don't know a whole lot about betting. I've said that before, but I do know that home field typically counts for three. And so Vegas sees this on a neutral field as a very, very even matchup. And the reason they're favoring the Lions largely is because it's at Ford Field. It's a good reason. Yep. You know, like you said, it's one of the best home environments in the NFL. What are you doing with this one, Will? What are you picking?
You know, for the first time since we began this podcast, I'm going to pick against the Lions this week. I think they're going to have their hands full with Green Bay. And Decker's likely absence gives me pause when it comes to some of the pass protection. But moreover, the losses on defense have piled up to the point that it's just impossible to envision the Lions continuing to hold teams down the way they did in the first half last week. I feel like what we saw in the second half is maybe a more uncomfortable reality of the way things might look, at least for the next couple of weeks while Pascal and Onzerike recover and the Lions integrate some of these new pieces. And I think the Packers come in here with close to their best on Thursday night. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the Packers win this game. You know, I'll say they will. I think that this is the end of the Lions win streak on Thursday night, which means they'll probably win by 38. but the attrition on defense has become so extreme that I just wonder how much longer they can hold up. And, you know, we've mentioned a lot of Green Bay's players. I think a really key one to watch offensively on Thursday night is Jaden Reed. He really hasn't had a big game in a while. I was just looking at his numbers. He's been pretty quiet over the last 3 weeks, but he's a guy who can carve you up in the slot. And, you know, I wonder if he breaks one or two in addition to whatever damage Josh Jacobs does. And it just on this night might become too much for the Lions to respond to.
I think all those points are very valid. And I totally understand your pick. I am going against maybe my gut a little bit here, and I'm going to take the Lions. 3.5 is a tough one, but man, I might hedge and take the Lions for the win and Packers with the points. But
the old Stoney.
that's right. The Packers just wrecked the 49ers and Dolphins. I mean, just absolutely wrecked them.
Yeah.
But the common theme there is that game was at Lambeau.
Mm-hmm.
You go back two more weeks, they barely escaped against the Bears. I know the Lions just barely escaped against the Bears too. I get it. And then 2 weeks before that, they barely escaped against the Jaguars. And so, you know, I think this team still has a little bit of problems on the road. They're still feels like a half year to a year behind the Lions in terms of overall development of their product. And despite all those defensive injuries, which are many, I think that the Lions are going to be able to pull this one out. And it, you know, it counts double. You know, it is a division game. The Vikings are still nipping at their heels. I don't know why I'm not, you know, particularly concerned about the Vikings ultimately catching the Lions, but the Eagles are the team that's a freight train right now. And that's the one that they really need to hold off, not just for them to get the number one seed, but I also need them to get the number one seed because I don't know if you know this, the Detroit Football Network budget needs that. these road trips are costly, you know, about $1,000 a pop. So if we could, do that, Lions, that would be swell. You know,
that's why
I don't root for them, but man, my budget's rooting for them.
You root for the wallet. That's why you got to stay at a Motel 6 outside Indy for $85 a night. That might have been
with a friend at Indy.
Oh, well done. Okay. That might have been my best investment of the season and a free breakfast the next day.
You stayed at a Motel 6?
Darn right, man. We had cable and high-speed Wi-Fi and bananas in the morning. Nothing more
fantastic.
You could need or want.
all right, that should do us for this week.
Is this podcast now sponsored by Motel 6?
We should work. Look at, man, that the people want the podcast to continue. Somebody's got to sponsor this thing.
That's right.
Or Will's just going to slowly
name on it.
Fade like one of the Jedis at the end of Star Wars here. Look, this episode is brought to you, not brought to you, produced by.
If he wants it to be, it can be brought to him.
We're still working on the brought to you by. Produced by Zach Clark. Zach's always working around our schedule. We really appreciate him. Does a great job. Podcasts will be available on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Download, like, listen, rate. I don't care what you do with it. Do all the things. Do some of the things. All of them are appreciated. You can read Will's work on 971theticket.com. That's where you get your, give them the whole playbook. We don't care about the scrap quote. good stuff this week. We didn't even talk about it because it doesn't matter. And you can find my work on the Detroit Football Network at DetroitFootball.net. For myself, Justin Rogers, for Will Birchfield.
For Brock Wright.
For Brock Wright. Thanks for listening.
Peace.